Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Scarier than anything we can dream of. And we dream such frightening things. Sci-fi and Scream.
Be afraid.
Be very afraid. On Joy 94.9.
And you are listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on this Wednesday night on Joy 94.9. Thanks to David and Jade for Different Strokes. That track was from the Serenity soundtrack. It's one of the final tracks playing over the final battle where Jane and Zoe, if you haven't seen the film, some of the main characters are stuck fighting against terrible odds. Doesn't look like they're going to come through, but in typically Joss Whedon fashion, good prevails in the end. Tonight, it's about the Whedonverse. Last weekend, Whedon mania absolutely gripped the fair city of Melbourne. It's one of the biggest deals in sort of sci-fi and genres in general. We're going to talk about the man who was the creator of some of the most inspiring and important television in popular pop culture history and in film. And he was actually here in town last Friday delivering the keynote address for the Melbourne Writers' Festival. So I'm going to give you a bit of a lowdown on that because I was there. And we'll also be playing a little bit of an interview from the secret screening of the banned gay zombie horror film, Bruce LaBruce's LA Zombie, that screened quietly and thankfully under the radar in Melbourne over the weekend. And we have news and views on everything science fiction and horror, including Sonia's assessment on the new 3D feature to burst out of cinema screens, Piranha 3D, which I'm very excited about. And as Worldcon approaches, we'll give you a bit of background on who's coming to town this week and why it's such an important event. This is Sci-Fi and Scream, Australia's very own and only LGBTIQ community radio sci-fi and horror show. So, Sonia, Joss yes. Whedon.
Well, I didn't make it to the, what was it, the talk that he had at the Melbourne, what was it?
Yeah, it was at the town hall. Mm. It was supposed to be a keynote address, yeah. But it didn't turn out to be a keynote address so much as a question and answer session, which was hosted by Sue Turnbull. And she started off the session by referring to Joss as God, which was pretty funny because he's quite openly atheist, agnostic. And he sort of replied by saying something along the lines of he didn't believe in himself, which was pretty funny.
That's funny. Very funny.
But because it was part of the Melbourne Writers' Festival, he was also asked about the differences in writing for TV and film and comic books, considering he's worked on all of those mediums extensively. And when the formal Q&A session was over, the audience had their chance to ask Joss their own questions. And there wasn't a lot of sort of quibbling over canon, so luckily nobody asked any questions about, you know, in episode 7 of Buffy season 3, blah, blah, blah. Basically, the question sort of revolved around how Joss's personal ideas really affect his writing. One person congratulated him on creating Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog during the writer's strike, which really, by producing something so successful and worthwhile, he really sort of landed a blow to the idea that you need a big studio and big money to produce a worthwhile piece of art. Of course, one of the other questions from the audience was the inevitable, how can I have a career like yours? Which was pretty funny. And Joss Whedon answered, basically said to the guy, if you don't have or feel the need to write all the time, like as your life, you should just give up. He certainly wasn't prepared to hand out his agent's phone number. It was the first time that I had seen Joss Whedon in person. And as in every sort of special feature or interview that I've ever seen him in, he was incredibly articulate and droll and clever. Sue Turnbull did ask him if he recognised that he had changed the face of long-form television. And he really sort of charmingly evaded claiming any credit for it and said sort of instead how he focuses on character and story development in television because he thinks it's really important. excuse me. He also mentioned that he's kind of lamenting the dearth of really great superhero or comic films, which is quite ironic considering what his next big project is going to be. He talked about the deconstruction of superheroes in films like Kick-Ass and said that he was still looking for a superhero movie that told a great story and that an audience could really connect with. So we'll have to wait and see if he can achieve that in the long-awaited Avengers movie.
Yes, looking at the topic of the new Avengers Marvel Comics series that's coming to the screen and that he's going to be doing, did you hear about what The Age reported on, that he had comments about Black Hawk Down as an influence?
No, seriously, I haven't heard that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, he made that in The Age quite recently. He said all sorts of things inspired him, and he used that as an example, Ridley Scott's 2001 film based on real events. He said something like, the movie made things click for me, he said, the most, because of the toll taken on the people that were in the protagonists. He said, I felt that superhero movies were a little too nihilistic or a little too clean. And he said, I want to stick the screws in and make it personal and make it tough.
I can kind of understand where he's coming from. I mean, anyone who's a Joss Whedon fan who's listening will know that in a lot of his work, he tries to sort of stick the boot into fantasy and happy endings. Usually when a character reaches sort of that zenith of happiness, he kills them or he kills the person that they love.
Yes.
So he likes to keep it pretty gritty. It's interesting that he would mention Black Hawk Down, because not only was that quite a gritty portrayal of a film, it had a lot of young actors and a couple of, at the time, people who were up-and-comers like Josh Hartnett and Orlando Bloom. Ewan Griffith, who's a Welsh actor, who actually was in Fantastic Four, really sort of ended up working quite well for...
Eric Banner was in that too.
Eric Banner was in it. Ewan McGregor was in it. It was quite a big cast, a well-known cast.
But you couldn't make out who they were.
No, because of the dirt on their faces and the helmets.
It was very existentialist, actually.
I think it's interesting that he would mention that, because I'd probably say something like Hurt Locker is a better film and tells a more interesting kind of story. Black Hawk Down was interesting, but I just found it a little
bit... He's going to be in the Avengers, is that right? Jeremy Renner. So he's worked in Angel too, I believe. He starred in a couple of the Angel episodes way back.
He might well have done. I'm really struggling to think of which ones they were. He's an amazing actor.
Not sure which ones.
He was in 28 Weeks Later and in...
Oh, yeah.
He played Jeffrey Dahmer in a biopic of that serial killer.
Which just brings us to the SMS topic.
Certainly,
if you want to talk about that.
In The Age today, you might have seen they published the top 10 psycho killers in film.
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
And at number one, of course, was Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs, followed very closely by Buffalo Bill from the same film.
Oh.
So they've kind of gone a bit old school.
Quite mainstream.
Very mainstream, I'd say, with the list.
Yeah.
Other people included were Jack Torrance from The Shining, Jigsaw from the Saw movies, Norman Bates from Psycho, of course, John Doe from Seven, which is a bit funny considering Kevin Spacey's in that movie for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I wouldn't have picked that one.
No.
No.
Ghostface from Scream. Again, a really kind of odd sort of choice. Max Cady from Cape Fear, Mick Taylor from Wolf Creek. And interestingly, Lou Ford, which is a character from the new Michael Winterbottom film, The Killer Inside of Me.
Right.
So not a killer most people would have been familiar with or would have even seen yet. So
that's true. Oh, that's an interesting mix.
Not definitely.
No monster. Is it monster?
Oh.
Yeah, the lesbian serial killer.
What was her name? Werno. Yeah, something like that.
I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no women. There's no one on there who's female. There's, I don't know. Well, they are saying psycho killer, and I don't know if she was... Would she be considered a psycho killer, do you think?
I think she was psychotic.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
I love that
scene
with her
line.
And Christina Ricci. It's great. Disturbing, but...
Charlize Theron, that was her, you know...
She could try all she liked to hit herself with the ugly stick, but it's not going to work.
No, it's ridiculous.
No way. Now, looking at Joss Whedon, do you mind if I ask you a couple of questions?
No, go for it.
Now, do you think he's got enough power now or enough weight in Hollywood to be able to, you know, basically do the Avengers the way he wants to?
I think it's touch
and
go.
Or the way his fans want to?
I think it's... He really said that he and Marvel are kind of in the same frame of mind about where they want this film to go. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think he anticipates any clashes. It will be interesting because...
Well, we've had Clash of the Titans.
This is true. Yeah. And Joss Whedon's a Titan, but he still doesn't really... I think he's on slightly unsteady ground. And if he wants to make the films that he wants to make, he's really going to have to negotiate pretty closely with Marvel. And it'll be interesting to see how much script control he gets and how many notes he gets from the studio, as compared to how much freedom he gets on the script.
Mm. And what do you think about, I was looking at Popcorn Taxi's site this afternoon, that possibly Joss Whedon could have been the person responsible for starting popular culture's obsession or rebooting of the modern day vampire.
It would be interesting because it was
since 92, probably, yeah. Since the original film.
Yes, Sue Turnbull actually asked him sort of about that influence, and I think it'd have to be a tie up between him and Anne Rice with her vampire stories, and the fact that Interview with a Vampire was 90.
I think about the same 91, time as maybe? Buffy the Vampire. 91 for that one, 92 for...
It'd be a close race between the... Because Interview with a Vampire was huge. I mean, it's been years now, so I think people forget. It was a massive film, huge effect.
It took about 20-odd years to bring to the screen. John Travolta was supposed to be
Lestat.
One of the... Yes, oh, back Christ, in 1978, 1979.
Oh, dear God, no. I'm glad they didn't go with that. But Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the film, was actually... quite a comedic turn. So, I mean, he quite possibly could be responsible for bringing back vampires as maybe less threatening.
Edward Cullen, I mean, does he not look like Angel?
No, I can't.
Seriously, with
I
the
can't.
Makeup, the, even the hair.
No, I can't conflate those two images in my mind because I love Angel so much.
If you look at an early, very early Angel in the second, third series of Buffy, you'll go...
He had high hair in those shows.
Better makeup.
Much better.
Onion skin makeup just doesn't work.
It's a little bit odd. But it's interesting because Sue Turnbull asked him, when she said, how do you feel about being responsible for sort of changing the format of long-form TV? She also threw in there, and I don't know if this was to make Joss feel more comfortable, the name Chris Carter, obviously the creator of The X-Files.
Yeah.
So I think it was a big time. You also had Dracula, the Bram Stoker version, with reboot with Gary Oldman, which came out maybe a little bit later or around the same time. They were really due vampires to come back in. And I think possibly a combination of things like Joss Whedon's work and X-Files.
I certainly think Buffy had a huge, huge deal.
Oh, yeah. Yep. To bring it to the teen audience, I think, was probably really key.
He mentioned the X-Files and he didn't like it in an interview I read. He just said after the fifth season, he just wanted to yell at Scully and say, they're monsters or something. Don't you get it? So
I think a lot of us were getting frustrated with it by the fifth or sixth season. I mean, I turned off pretty much after, I turned off after Mulder left the show. And I think that once they started moving on to different sort of arcs and Mulder became a lot more angsty about the aliens and the abduction and his family and how his family all tied into it, they alienated a few of the viewers, no pun intended.
Now, what about Serenity? Do you think Serenity and Firefly, respectively, I don't know if I got the right order there, are headed by a male hero? Maybe, do you think, I was wondering today if that could have been the reason why it was axed by Fox, because they wanted a female hero, which they used to with Whedon.
Yeah, I would say that's probably...
Because no one was watching it, is
that
right?
It's unlikely to be the reason. Well, the reason that Firefly went down the tubes, there'll be a lot of arguments for it, is that it wasn't what the studio was looking for. Also, when they aired it out of sequence. So they didn't play the pilot first. They played, I think it was The Train Job, which is one of the later episodes. So the studio really did bollocks up the presentation of Firefly to the audience, which is kind of what they did with Dollhouse. They put it on a really tough time slot. If it didn't make it there, it was going to die. So Firefly, I don't think you can... Honestly, in terms of quality, you can't fault it.
No.
It's not about male archetypes and female archetypes. It really does blend the boundaries.
Yeah,
maybe that's what they were scared of.
Perhaps. Which brings me to the question, why doesn't he do a lot of... He doesn't seem to do a lot of particularly strong male characters for females. You know, he gets that question all the time, I believe.
And I think he's
females.
Yeah, I think he kind of addresses it in a way that Well, I can't think of anything you said specifically on it, but I mean, I can think of a lot of really strong male characters. Angel's a strong male character.
Yeah, true.
He gets characters who men who are strong in their own way. Like Xander's very, his strength comes from his humour and his ability to be the fall guy in the group. Angel's strength comes from probably like sheer will. The fact that he's, you know,
his evilness makes him quite a strong person. Well,
it does make him strong, yeah, and he's obviously very physically strong for being a vampire. But I also think he's sort of, he had a character in Angel called Doyle, who was only in the first season, and he actually sacrifices himself for the world, kind of. So he has a lot of male characters who take on what might be seen as female.
They always seem like mascots to the females, or what do you call it, the person you have, sidekick.
Kind of, yeah. Mal in Firefly is a bit ridiculous at times. Mm. He's the hero, but he's like, he's a bit. He's a bit the kind of guy who gets involved in a fight but gets his ass kicked because he doesn't.
Dim.
A little bit, but all heart.
But means well. Yeah, he's pretty macho. Now, I wonder if anyone, or if yourself, you could name the gay and lesbian or bisexual characters in the Whedonverse.
There were a few.
There must be a few.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, you've got Willow and Tara and, Willow's last girlfriend starts with K, kicking myself because I can't remember her name, one of the potentials. You've got Andrew, who was considered, although I don't think it was ever openly declared, I think he was considered to be gay. There are definitely... Lorne, who was an alien character played by Andy Hallett, was generally sort of considered to be a camper character, if not sort of openly gay. Who else do you have? In Firefly, you actually have an entire episode where Inara, who plays the companion, she's like a prostitute or a
concubine,
an escort. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has a relationship or has a client who's a female. I can't remember if she's a senator or a parliamentarian.
Oh, okay.
So he's never shied away from...
Yeah, never. Because apparently Xander was supposed to be a gay character, but didn't work out.
No, and then Willow kind of just organically evolved into this, into who she was, which was a witch and a lesbian. Mm. And it was great. Really, it really felt natural.
Okay, well, that's great. And so what did you think of the talk overall?
Really enjoyed it. He's an incredibly articulate and clever person, and he goes straight to the heart of the matter. In a question, he doesn't waffle on too much. Mm. He's just a really great speaker and inspiring thinker.
Great.
You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9, and we are talking a few different things. We've spoken a little bit about Joss Whedon and his keynote address at the Melbourne Writers' Festival. It was a very exciting time for me. I'm a bit of a Whedon fan, and there was an entire Melbourne town hall full of Whedon fans, which was fantastic.
That must have been quite something.
It really was.
How many people do you think?
It's hard to gauge, but I can't even know how many people it takes, but it felt like there were like 1,000 people in there. Whoa. It's probably less, but it's a big enough venue.
Hall. Yeah.
And you had sort of the ground floor, the stalls and the upper seats open as well. So it was quite a big showing.
Big deal. Yep.
Yeah, very much so. So we had Joss Whedon on Friday, and then I'll just have a quick word. You might have heard us play a promo on last week's show for Can't Stop the Serenity, and that happened on Saturday. The Melbourne Browncoats actually held their fifth Can't Stop the Serenity fundraiser on Saturday at the University of Melbourne at the Union Theatre there. Now, the Browncoats, and Browncoat refers to the sort of rebel group.
It's nothing
in
to do
Firefly.
With the Browncoats in Germany.
Not the brown shirts. So the Browncoats screen Joss Whedon's film Serenity every year as part of a worldwide fundraiser for Equality Now, which is a charity that works to improve the quality of life for women and girls in developing countries. And that's a charity that Joss is actually a patron of. This year they also screen Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, which is a very popular, if you don't know, that's Joss Whedon's online sing-along sort of musical that he did. The Browncoats sold raffle tickets and auctioned off Whedonverse-related and pop culture memorabilia. And before the screening, the organisers actually asked those people who had seen Serenity before to muffle their gasps and sighs and comments for the benefit of those people who hadn't seen the film before. And I was pretty surprised that there were quite a few people who turned up to this event having never seen Serenity.
Yeah.
It seems like a bit of an odd forum to see it for the first time. And Yeah, I mean, it was great. There's just something really special about being in a theatre with a bunch of really sort of like-minded people.
With the lights down.
Lights down. Mm. You know, some of us had seen the film, must have seen the film like 50 times, but you still show up because it's a big event.
Do you see anything different in the film each time?
I've seen it that many times, I probably don't, but the same parts affect me the same way they always have. So it's still a really impactful sort of film. And it was, I think, quite a successful event. The Browncoats said they aimed to raise about $3,000 for Equality Now.
Oh, great.
And the auction alone must have raised about at least sort of $1,500, if not more than that. So hopefully raise some money for a good
cause. He's behind
it
too, isn't he? He's behind a lot of humanist awareness and things like that. And he's actually an atheist.
Yeah, he really is. And I think he's the kind of person who, even at his keynote address, he spoke about the power of corporations and the sort of their influence they wield in society. And I don't know if you've ever seen any of his show Dollhouse.
No.
He sort of has these, some of his shows, he has these evil corporations. So you've got like Wolfram and Hart, which are a big firm of lawyers in Angel.
Okay. Yeah.
You've got the Rossum Corporation in Dollhouse.
I quite liked the CEO, I think it was, in Wolfram and Hart.
In Wolfram and Hart.
They were great characters.
They were great characters.
Because they weren't completely despicable. Well, they were, but they also had,
humour
and feelings.
They were very matter-of-fact about it. They were like, okay, we represent this demon or we whatever. And it was really quite a funny sort of effect. But I suppose the overall message was, and this is especially true in the last season of Angel, where Angel Investigations moves into the Wolfram and Hart building.
Yes, that's right.
That absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And you just can't have... It doesn't matter if it's a corporation or anything with that kind
or
of
military,
influence
like
or military.
He had that in Buffy where he had the what do they call the initiative? Same
very similar
sort of
idea. Yeah. It's the same thing with the Alliance in Firefly Serenity. Mm. You can't really give any corporation or any faceless group of people that much power and expect to go well for the general populace. Yes. There's going to be some kind of abuse of power.
Generally thinking. I read a quote from him, actually. He says, "I am a very hardline, angry atheist, yet I'm fascinated by the concept of devotion." Which is a very interesting way of putting it.
Definitely. We're talking about Joss Whedon and his views and how much his views impact his writing and what he puts out there. He's a bit of a... It's funny, there's a line in Serenity where Shepherd Book's talking about the operative who's sort of the villain of the piece. And he says, you know, a man like that believes hard and I think never gives up or something like that. And it's true. I think Joss is fascinated by the idea that belief in something, whether it's an idea or whether it's some sort of theology, will actually motivate people to do really horrible things.
That is true. Wow, it's, quite a weekend for Whedon fans.
Big weekend.
Big weekend. Yep. And then he went off to Sydney, to the Opera House.
Sold out in the Opera House.
That's huge.
It's quite massive. And I'm not exactly sure why he made the trip down to Australia, but it was exciting to see him. And, I mean, he came down for Serenity screenings and he went out to the suburbs of Melbourne to watch with fans. So,
but now it's probably getting harder. Since I heard that, he got the Avengers gig. I just thought it is going to be harder to get.
Well, he's not
for him to get out and about himself.
Yeah, I don't think he's. But I mean, you know what? If the Avengers doesn't work out, or if they push him in a direction he doesn't want to go in, it's almost 100% that he won't stay with the project. I think he's a very he's quite an ethical.
He's an individual,
producer, and he's an individual. Yeah,
very much. Do you think fans would be disappointed if he...
I'm very excited about the Avengers.
No, if he does pull out.
Oh, if he does. Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm excited about the film and I'll be very disappointed if he pulls out. I mean, watching Serenity again, he has made a film that is... Yeah, okay, it's not going to change the world. Although it kind of has. But it's incredible. He's created characters you care about. He's made it into a blockbuster, but it still has heart. And that's something not a lot of directors can achieve. So The Age today put out their top 10 psycho killers in film, and Hannibal Lecter topped the poll. But they also had a few sort of mainstream inclusions, as we've said. And we've also had an SMS come through.
Oh,
and
excellent.
Someone has said Dr. Horrible is a strong male. So we were talking about Joss Whedon and how he sort of tends to write really strong female characters, but maybe fewer strong male characters. And yes, Dr. Horrible, he is a strong male, but he gets into a lot of trouble for what he believes in.
I haven't seen it yet.
I have to lend you the DVD. Oh,
okay. And sing along, yes?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, you have to sing along when you watch
it. Does it have the
subtitles? I think you can turn on the subtitles and sing along with
it. Oh, cool, like karaoke. Yeah. That sounds good. Now, after these messages, we will be looking at LA Zombie. You're listening to Sonia and Kaz on Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Okay. Sonia from Sci-Fi and Squeam, which is on Wednesday nights on Joy 94.9.
Lovely.
Richard.
Yes, the director of the Melbourne Underground Film Festival, Richard Wollstonecroft, here in your presence.
So how is it going? This is the
secret screening of Bruce LaBruce's LA Zombie, the Melbourne premiere, and it starts in about 10 minutes, and I think we're going to get away with it just quietly between you and me.
Mm. It looks so far, it looks good. There's,
yep, no police have come up and hassled me, so that's a good sign.
Ominous looking people?
No, another journalist who remained anonymous contacted the censorship board, and they said they were thinking of re-examining this film. And I got a feeling that they haven't got a hard-on for it. So I think we're about to have a successful screening and a victory for freedom of speech in Melbourne.
And it's about time. I was expecting a lot more people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a
Sunday
night?
I kept it pretty secret, though, because I set up a Facebook group that was connected to our, an invitation-only group that was connected to our Facebook group. So you had to kind of really search for it. Yeah. That way, we've got a full house, though. So, what can you do? You can't get any better than that, can you?
That's great. And if you had contact with the director, Bruce LaBruce himself?
Indeed. He was a guest of Muff about 5 years ago.
Excellent.
And, we had a lot of fun when he was here. We stayed in contact and remained friends. And when Miff dropped the ball and they weren't going to defend freedom of speech, we thought Muff would pick up the ball and, try and do something about it. And we're about to find out whether we get away with it.
Great. So he's been quite supportive then?
He has, yes, very much.
Because he did say in earlier interviews that this was good publicity. To get banned.
I agree with that. That's Oscar Wilde's quote, isn't it? All publicity is good publicity. I think Wilde is quite correct. And that I think the fact that it was banned from MIFF is good publicity. I think the fact that it's now going to play here at MUFF is good publicity. So, yeah.
And for people who are critical of it, what can you say to them? That
they're idiots. No one's forcing anybody to watch this film.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? If you don't like it, just stay away like anything else. It's not being forced. You've got to find this. Tonight, you've really got to find your way down here and, see what's going on. So,
excellent. All right. Anything else you want to add?
Just support the Melbourne Underground Film Festival, support independent filmmaking, and fuck censorship.
Excellent.
Thank you.
That was Richard Wollstonecroft from MUFF here on Joy 94.9. Welcome back to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9.
I liked Richard's message.
Yes, it was pretty, I couldn't have edited that out.
No.
Priceless.
It absolutely was, and he's 100% correct that you need, it was disappointing when Miff didn't fight for LA Zombie, and that's why we brought it up on our show.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And then it was exciting to see that it was being screened in this underground kind of manner. It was very cool.
And there were no police. There wasn't any problem. They did flash the lights at one stage. I think that was just to create a bit of tension. But nothing happened. And it was a full house and everybody was, enjoying themselves. It was a silly film. It is a silly film. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yep, I heard the reviews that came out afterwards.
Mm.
And doesn't that just further prove that the ban on it was ridiculous?
Yes, absolutely. You can't take it seriously. The penis doesn't look anything like a real penis, not from the ones I've seen in the past. It had a claw on the end of it, and it was blue, cobalt blue.
And reiterating the point that zombies aren't real.
You're right. Real zombies aren't real.
No, that's it. LA is a real place. Zombies are not real.
Yeah. Yeah, Francois Sagiat is a stupendous looking man, and but I don't doubt he's homeless, and I doubt he's a zombie.
I mean, you can't confirm or deny, but you're pretty sure he's not The Walking Dead.
No, I would hope not, because I'd see a doctor if I was him. Definitely.
Oh, good lord, I think the Australian censorship authority,
especially the colour of his jism,
what
pretty
colour
off.
Was it?
Blacky blue colour.
Oh, nasty.
Yeah, nasty. I'd get a checkup.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't get a chance to see the underground screening, but I will see it at some point.
Yeah, you should be able to get it hopefully soon.
On DVD.
Because they're going to re-examine the whole classification, which is great.
I know. I think it's a real win, and I think people really need to arc up about these sorts of things.
Definitely.
If they happen, definitely make your voice heard. It is bloody ridiculous.
Mm.
So, hooray for LA Zombie.
Hooray.
Okay, so we've got quite a big weekend coming up in Melbourne. especially if you're a science fiction fan or a pop culture fan or a fan of anything genre, really. Melbourne is hosting Worldcon. It's the 68th World Science Fiction Convention, and it's going to be held actually from tomorrow till Monday at the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre. Guests of honour are Hugo Award-winning author Kim Stanley Robinson, the award-winning artist Sean Tan, who's an Australian, and they're actually having a fan as a special guest. His name is Robin Johnson. Melbourne has hosted World Cons before in 1975, 1985 and 1999, and 2010 is again the year of Melburton, the year of Worldcon in Melbourne. Worldcon brings together science fiction and fantasy professionals and fans from all over the world. All forms of science fiction and fantasy are represented, from film and television, comics, costuming, gaming, but particularly literature. Programming is huge. If you go onto the Worldcon site and you have a look at the program, there are panels, there are discussions, there are lectures, there are science demonstrations, films and readings, sort of authors reading their work, autograph sessions, and the list of people who, some of the list of people who are appearing, I just picked a few names out. You've got China Mierville, who's come through as a really quite a big name recently. Alastair Reynolds, who landed £1 million publishing deal with his publisher, which was, it's unheard
interviewing
of.
Interviewing him tomorrow. So
it's going to be so exciting.
That'd be good. Yeah.
Unheard of in science fiction sort of circles. Garth Nix, who's an Australian and who's actually going to be hosting the Hugos. Trudy Canavan, who's a best-selling author. She's had the Black Magicians trilogy. It's something you might have heard of. Ian Irvine, who's a phenomenally busy Australian author who's written the Three Worlds series of books, as well as Runcible Jones and about a million others. Kylie Chan, whose Dark Heavens trilogy you might have seen on the shelves. Paul Cornell, who has written, I think, comics, but also written for Doctor Who. Big names like George R.R. Martin, Juliette Marillier. The program and the list is just huge. So you really need to, it's something that if you're a science fiction or a fantasy fan, you have to be aware that Worldcon is going down in Melbourne this coming weekend. In case you haven't heard of Kim Stanley Robinson, who is one of the special guests, he's actually the author of about 20 books, and he's won a Hugo Award, a Nebula and Locus Awards for his best-selling novels. He's sort of one of the foremost writers of science fiction and a really big fan favourite. He is an environmentalist and a social critic as well as a novelist, and the themes of ecology and environmentalism and social justice really do prevail in his novels. They run through his Martian trilogy, which are Red, Green and Blue Mars, in which sort of the terraforming and colonization of Mars provides an exploration of sustainability and ethics and corporate greed. And not only that, the value of scientific pursuit. So he really is a proper sci-fi writer, a fascinating person.
There's quite a number there. Hopefully we'll get to talk to, including some, yeah, like you're saying, fans, but some bloggers as well, some pretty popular bloggers that will be discussing the different genres, and I think that's fascinating.
Well, you're going to need to have bloggers there because there are so many sessions running concurrently. You'd never be able to get to all of them. So you're going to have to like read the blogs on the sessions that you miss. It's a really fascinating program, and I feel really privileged to get a chance to even have a look in, really. It's a massive, massive thing. Yeah, like I mentioned, you've got Sean Tan as well, who's an award-winning illustrator and author of books, and his illustrations have been used in exhibitions around the world, but also children's books, and he's a real key. I mean, I'm studying teaching at the moment. He's a real key illustrator and author.
I just love going to children's book sections. I probably spend more time there than the adult sections, just looking at the illustrations, and his work is just
it's phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is absolutely
brilliant.
Beautiful. And as I mentioned, Robin Johnson, who's actually a sort of a veteran of Worldcon and NatCon conventions, has sort of worked tirelessly to promote and organise science fiction conventions in Australia, and he's being recognised for his work and his service at this Worldcon, which is great because in Australia we're so far away from the rest of the world that sometimes we do miss out on those sorts of things. So Worldcon happening in Melbourne this weekend at the Melbourne Convention Centre.
From the 2nd to the 6th, is that right?
2nd to the 6th.
Yeah. Robert Silverberg's another one that's coming over. And Garth Nix talked about him.
Huge, huge.
He's looking forward to seeing, meeting him, actually.
It's going to be fantastic. So we'll play a bit of Garth Nix. Sonia, you interviewed Garth Nix, who is generally recognised as a young adult writer, but also, I mean, he's pretty much recognised as
There's a lot of adults who read his stuff.
I read his stuff when I was an adult, and I really enjoyed
You're
it.
You're a grown up now.
I know.
But there's also, I'm not going to give it away, but there's some interesting news he's got to talk about too.
Exciting.
So it is actually quite interesting.
I'm going to keep my speculation to myself.
Yeah, well, it is speculative fiction, so that's what it's all about. So if people haven't got anything on the weekend, they should really check that out down at the exhibition
centre. Go down to Worldcon, even if you can sort of sneak in and get a ticket for a day or something. It would be really exciting. We're going to talk a little bit in the show about Piranha 3D.
Oh, yes. This is Sci-Fi and Squeam, and this is Joy 94.9 with Kaz and Sonia. And what was that track?
That track was
awesome.
Leaf on the Wind by the Bedlam Bards. Now, the Bedlam Bards were so inspired by Firefly, the TV series, and Serenity, the movie, that they wrote songs about them. Leaf on the Wind is in reference to something that one of the characters, Wash, says in the film. It's one of the funny things that happens in sort of sci-fi and fantasy. Fans sometimes respond in song. So the Bedlam Bards do that with Joss's work. And anyone who's a big Harry Potter fan would probably also have heard of Wizard Rock, which is maybe a slightly less melodic response to Harry Potter in song.
Right. Who are they?
A million different kinds of bands. There's Draco and the Malfoys, Harry and the Potters.
So they've all got names like that, obviously. Okay.
Yeah,
well, that makes sense. It's cute.
It is cute, and I'm a big Harry Potter fan.
Will they ever have a battle of the
Wizard Rock bands?
Yes,
maybe.
That could be great.
That would be quite funny in an sort of way.
Yeah, the Queen could come along and watch that. She'd probably, since J.K. Rowling earns more than the Queen.
Yes, and J.K. Rowling's actually just given £10 million to multiple sclerosis research, so she's not all talk about doing good in the community. She actually gets out there. Her mother passed away from multiple sclerosis, so it's an issue that's very close to her heart. Good on you, J.K. Rowling.
Good. Now we're going to look at Piranha 3D. That's Alexandre Aja's Piranha 3D, that is. Not to be confused with Joe Dante's classic from 1978.
And it's an awesome, awesome movie, the original.
Yes. When did you see that?
When I was a kid. I remember watching it at a sleepover, and it was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a great film. It was the Jaws at the time. It was like a follow-up, their version.
Small Jaws.
Lots of small Jaws. Now, Piranha 3D, maybe they should rename this 3D mega bikini hubba hubba fun as spring break chicks get eaten by tit-fancying frightening fish. Sorry, but...
I'm surprised you managed to say that without twisting your own tongue around.
I know. I did a little bit, actually, but... This is French horror slasher director Alexandre Aja's, Make It or Break It in Hollywood flick. His earlier film, I'm quite sentimental about, and that's Haute Tension, or in English it was called High Tension. That was a lovely lesbian slasher film, if there's such a thing, starring Cécile de France. And that was memorable at least, and fairly intelligent with the horror, a well-crafted film. And that came out in 2003. Alas, this isn't anywhere near memorable, and certainly no female leads stand out unless you commit yourself to memory, the perfect bodies and the enlarged artificial breasts that are super and hyper real in this film. And let's face it, there are so many breasts in this film. It's just...
kind of distracting from the killer fish.
And they're 3D, and you can't escape. You can't dodge them.
No,
it's just, you can't duck. They're just there. Okay, all the way through the film. It's pretty forgettable, really, after the first 15 to 20 minutes of being inundated with these breasts. But don't get me wrong. I did actually find the opening scene was pretty clever and quite funny with Richard Dreyfuss making a bit of a cameo appearance in a boat.
Nice.
And,
nice illusion there.
Bit of a homage to Jaws. And the ravenous fish get him, of course. And the bloodiness of the credits at the beginning is actually quite promising. Well, seems quite promising. But just like a souffle that you pull out of the oven way too quickly, kapoof, it all goes a bit flat except for the artificial and very large breasts. Now, so the story is pretty far-fetched. A prehistoric lake under a lake is opened up from an earthquake, and out into our world come beasties, carnivorous beasties from Paleolithic times. Strangely enough, they've been able to survive on eating each other.
Of course they have.
It's not very scientific.
No, and I quibble with the whole lake under a lake thing. Yeah. I mean, just geology, whatever.
Mm. And the twist is at the end about the future of the fish to do with size or maturity, but I won't spoil that for you in case you do plan on going along to this film. Look, it's a fun film. It's shallow, unlike the lake where it's set. But if you like that sort of thing and you're into a lot of breasts and booty, maybe, and you're about age 13, you might actually enjoy this very camp horror. It did remind me of Carry On films in a bizarre way. Carry On Piranha, maybe. But be on the lookout for a cameo appearance by the horror meister himself, Eli Roth, who makes an appearance, of course.
With all those boobs around, of course he does.
He likes boobs.
I think he does.
He's a booby man, definitely. And all credit to Jerry O'Donnell and his penis, which almost steals the entire show. But you have to see it to believe it. And that's what I mean. Now, I give this a 2 out of 5. And try to remember your Avatar 3D glasses, because it works out more economical if you take those along with you.
Yeah, you don't pay the $1.50 or whatever it is to get them.
Now, Empire magazine gave the film a 3 out of 5 stars, saying, remember the film you hoped Snakes on a Plane would be? They say, this is it.
And how dare they malign Snakes on a Plane? It was a great film.
I deliberately put that in because I knew you liked Snakes on a Plane
it's
for
a
some reason.
Fabulous film.
Mm. So there you go.
Okay, Piranha 3D.
Piranha.
Mm. That's quite a recommendation. Now, I did want to mention just a few things that we kind of hadn't had a lot of time in the last few weeks to talk about because we've been so busy and there is so much going on in the world of sci-fi, horror and fantasy. I want to talk a little bit about X-Men First Class. Now, we've got a bit of a catch-up to do because it seemed like every 5 minutes they were releasing another bit of information about this film.
Yes.
Now, the film X-Men First Class is going to be directed by Matthew Vaughn, who brought us Kick-Ass and Stardust. He's working with Jane Goldman, with whom he also worked on the scripts of Kick-Ass and Stardust. So do I.
I really found it quite lovely and moving. Yeah.
So did I. Fun adaptation of the Neil Gaiman book. And the film is actually going to be produced by Bryan Singer, who directed X-Men, X2 and Wolverine Origins.
Wolverine R Us. Is that coming out soon?
I don't know. That'd be interesting to see. Matthew Vaughn has confirmed that the film is a prequel to the first 3 films. It will take place during the 1960s and it will parallel the history of Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X.
Oh.
So I don't really know how they're going to...
Sounds a bit dodgy.
Don't really know how they're going to do that. Now, some interesting sort of things that they're saying the X-Men costumes are going to look a lot more like they did in the original comics compared to sort of the black leather of the first 3 films. And for most of the film, Professor X will not be bald or in a wheelchair. So I think they're going to explain why Xavier is later forced to use a wheelchair. The villains of the piece will actually be the Hellfire Club. So if you're familiar with the X-Men world, this won't sound completely foreign to you. I think it's basically going to be a bit of an origins story about Charles Xavier and Eric, or Professor X and Magneto, as two young men and sort of the discovery of their powers. What can I say? Even starting to go through the mammoth cast list is just going to take so much time. You've got the genuinely wonderful Michael Fassbender, who has been in 300, in Hex, in Inglourious Bastards, in Hunger.
He's fantastic.
He is honestly...
He should be James Bond, I think. He's one of those people who
acting is what he does, and he's brilliant.
Yep.
And he's going to play Eric Lencher, or Magneto, as a younger man. And, of course, Ian McKellen portrayed Magneto in the previous films.
Not to be confused with Magento.
No. Slightly different, maybe more, you know, with more flair, a superhero. James McAvoy will play Professor Charles Xavier. And he's, of course, been in Wanted, Atonement, Shameless, and he's another actor who is well on his way to becoming quite a superstar. January Jones from Mad Men will play the White Queen, Emma Frost. Nicholas Holt from Skins and About a Boy, and, of course, he will be in the upcoming Mad Max film, will play a young Hank McCoy, also known as Beast. Interestingly, Kevin Bacon, who has, of course, been in everything, is going to play the Black King, Sebastian Shaw, leader of the New York branch of the Hellfire Club. He's a very bad guy, and I'm very excited about seeing him brought to film. Lucas Till will play Alex Summers, or Havoc, Cyclops' brother. And I don't think Cyclops will be making an appearance in this film. Jennifer Lawrence will play a young Mystique.
It's very one-eyed of them.
It is a little one. Boom, boom. Zoe Kravitz, who's actually the daughter of Lenny Kravitz and Lisa Bonet, is going to play Angel Salvadore.
But she's pretty.
She's a lovely looking girl, actually. Very interesting sort of features. She's going to play Angel Salvatore, who also goes by the name Tempest. Jason Fleming, who is a big Matthew Vaughn favourite, is going to play Nightcrawler's father, Azazel. Eddie Gathegi, who you might remember from the Twilight New Moon, he played Laurent. One of the vamps, the evil vamps in Twilight, is going to play Darwin. And Caleb Landry-Jones from Friday Night Lights is going to play Sean Cassidy or Banshee. Banshee's a really interesting character. He's got like this supersonic scream. That's kind of his power that sort of disables people. It's really, it'd be interesting. Put the earplugs in before you go and see it. Oliver Platt is going to play the Man in Black, who's apparently not a mutant, but I have no idea what else that means.
It's like Johnny Cash.
No? If Oliver Platt played Johnny Cash,
he could do it.
I think it would be hilarious. Rose Byrne is also rumoured to be playing Dr. Moira MacTaggert. So it'll be interesting to see how they introduce that character. As I said, it's going to be set in the early 60s. The two protagonists, Xavier and Magneto, will be in their late 20s. This is not sort of the conventional first-class comic origins. It's going to be quite a new beginning for X-Men by the sounds of things. As I mentioned, the film's going to feature the Hellfire Club, and if you're not very familiar with the world of X-Men, it may not sound very meaningful to you, but I think you can tell from the name they're not the nicest people in the world. And the film is actually set to start production or filming in London on September 21st. So just a few weeks away.
Oh.
We've already got heaps of information on it. And, yeah, I'm sure more will come out.
What are they
going to
do about all the celebrity trailers? Like, they'll be just stockpiling them.
I don't know what's going to happen.
There's so many celebrity trailers.
It's going to be awesome, though, and I'm a little bit excited but also a bit worried because I think they've got all this sort of pre-production talk about it, and when they hit production, who knows? I mean, James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender are such huge names, and they're probably being offered really big jobs at the moment. My biggest fear is that they're going to pull one of them off the project.
And with that many big names, the budget could blow out just on the actors.
That's it. I mean,
there is a recession, apparently. So,
but they have done that thing where they've brought in a lot of English or British actors that Matthew Vaughn and Jane Goldman have worked with before.
Just get New Zealanders or Canadians.
They do it for the love. Well, they might as well just bring Hugh Jackman back. He's an Aussie. He'll probably just work for a beer and, like, a sausage or something. So, no, he wouldn't do that, of course.
I
but it would,
he likes
be,
sausages. No.
It would be exciting to see Wolverine in the film. So that's X-Men First Class. Lots of news, and there'll be even more coming out before shooting starts. And also, in case you hadn't heard in the last few weeks, Torchwood will be back for a fourth season. Very excited about that. It's going to be called The New World. And the two remaining characters, Captain Jack Harkness and Gwen, will be coming back for that. We mentioned zombies a little bit earlier in the show. The Walking Dead is a zombie show that we talked about.
Yeah.
We've talked about a little bit this season. Mm. The trailers have come out. It looks really interesting. It looks a bit like a cross kind of between like 28 Days Later and a Western. I don't know if that's helpful for anyone,
okay.
But it's really interesting. Again, it's de rigueur in Hollywood these days. If you're going to bring out a new TV show, you put Brits in the place of main characters. So Andrew Lincoln and Lenny James, who was also in the Prisoner remake, they're going to be playing leads in the pilot at least. So The Walking Dead, new zombie TV show.
Sounds like True Blood, really a little bit like True Blood.
Might be a little bit like True. Well, I don't think it's a lot like True Blood
during sex.
Yes, maybe. And I don't know how you can sort of stretch out the zombie thing over a series because surely they fall apart, they start
to
rot.
Yeah,
but you know, we'll see how they go. And the trailer looks exciting, so check out the trailer for Walking Dead. It's going to premiere in on Halloween in the US, but no word yet on when it's going to show in Australia. Sci-Fi and Squeam, we've packed a lot into the show tonight.
Definitely.
We
have a lot.
One SMS that's come through, and I think it's in response to your review.
Oh, perhaps Piranha 3D should be called Breast Fest 3D. That's a good idea. Yes.
Thanks for that suggestion, Grace.
Fantastic. Now, next week we're going to be looking at, a lot of AussieCon or WorldCon, because it's going to be a feast out there.
It's going to be
science
huge.
Science fiction feast.
And you'll get to hear a lot of interviews.
And there'll be interviews, yep. Definitely. So that's when you tune in next week. It's the 1st of September, by the way, so happy spring. If you like spring.
Yeah.
And up next, we've got Adam Todd with a band camp. You've been listening to Sonia and Kaz on Joy 94.9, doing Sci-Fi and Squeam.
Sci-Fi and Squeam was synthesized and squashed into shape by Sonia, Albert and Kaz. For more information, visit our Facebook page, Sci-Fi and Squeam, or check out joy.org.au.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.